This is, tell me how all this, and love too, will ruin us. A Star Trek reboot fanfic, written by Stardust Cities and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG and contain hints of a possible future pairing of IL Jim. Author's notes. AU, in which Nero took Jim from the Kelvin and tasked Dayal with raising him as a Romulan warrior. Loosely based on a Kinkmeme prompt that I have lost the link to. At desk watch, when the Narada's lights go down, Ayel retires to his usual perch. The cyclic lighting system, worked to the pattern of the sun that bathed Romulus, was Nero's idea. It serves as a measure of control, a grasp on something intangible in the darkness of space. Ayel strips his rifle when he's settled, out on one of the quieter decks, close enough to the engines to feel their hum as a constant, steadying vibration, through the metal of the ledge and up into his body, thrumming into his bones. He lets his legs slide off the edge of the platform up to his knees, kicks his feet in the empty air, takes the appropriate, respectful amount of time to stare down into the belly of the ship, hundreds of feet and one slip below, waiting like a crouched wolf. The barrel of the rifle goes across his lap, the rest of its myriad pieces by his side. His left side, his good side, so they may be reached quickly if something goes awry. Ayel doubts that here, in the deep of an uncharted galaxy, anything will go wrong. But he dislikes the notion of being out of practice. So he slicks his fingers with grease and works them into the recesses and crevices of his rifle, his fingers moving deftly over metal suppled from use. It's his routine, his preferred method of meditation. The one thing the Vulcans have right. Jim comes to find him only minutes after the watch begins, his footsteps light but audible in the quiet of the ship. Those who are not on dusk watch retire at this time, save Nero, who retires when he collapses from exhaustion. Ayel glances up when Jim, bare-chested, drops down beside him. He waits for the boy to get settled, watches as he curls one leg up to his chest and lets the other dangle. The glitter of a newborn knife slotted into the sheath at Jim's hip catches Ayel's eye, hung from the leather belt Jim is so proud of. It was a gift from Nero, when Jim killed his first man. Ayel cleans the grease from his hand with the soft cloths he uses to care for his gun, and reaches over to tap two curled fingers under Jim's chin in greeting. Jim's small smile bursts into a grin at the familiar motion, and he takes it as permission to speak. Enthusiastically. Look, Ayel, look! He crows, pulling the knife from his belt. Ayel can see it's made from tritanium, bright silver and polished so thoroughly to a shine that it's almost painful to look at. He examines it with a craftsman's eye, tries valiantly not to do so with a mentor's eye, which strains to see all that Jim does as a remarkable accomplishment, and remembers his first knife. He was older than Jim when he first crafted his, but of course, he was raised on Romulus as a miner, not a warrior. Jim has been raised as a valuable crew member of the Narada, and as such, he has been taught the ways of the Romulan warrior culture. He has learned, through perseverance and great effort, as Ayel proudly murmured to Nero once, after a particularly grueling hand-to-hand training session, to walk beneath the raptor's wings. Do you like it? Jim asks, leaning in closer to him. Ayel holds up a hand to silence him, attention drawn back to the blade. He weighs it in his hand, noting the finely crafted meshing of handle and blade, and the top edge, which, according to the crew's weapon-making traditions, is edged with a sliver of scrap from the ship itself, melted down and mixed with Jim's blood. Ayel brings the knife closer and marvels briefly at how strange human blood smells, and I always come to associate this scent with Jim. Once the knife is closer, Ayel traces the delicately etched sigils of Romulan language, reads Jim's history in the sweeping strokes of the molded tritanium. Light refraction plague hell with the symbols, as it should. Jim certainly would kill any enemy who attempted to read the story written there. Ayel follows along, sees the marks for human and Romulan and half-breed and warrior, along with a summary of Jim's accomplishments up to this point in his life. Next to the list is Jim's age. 17 years by human standards. And near the tip, the glyphs for his name. Ayel's, too. It takes Ayel a thick moment to unweave the familiar sigils in his head. He's certain that he must be mistaken. Romulan warriors don't place others' names on their weapons, in keeping with the belief that weapons are an extension of one's body. You... He looks to Jim, whose expression has gone from elated to guardedly nervous. No wonder he's so eager for Ayel's good graces. Ayel looks back at the blade, flips it once and slides it back into Jim's palm, wraps his fingers over Jim's and folds his hand closed. Do you like it? Jim asks again, more subdued. Ayel huffs out of breath at his own inability to maintain a stern attitude and nods. I like it. It's fine work for your first blade. Ayel hikes an eyebrow, draws his rifle back into his hands. This business with my name? Jim ducks his head, his eyes widening just that little bit. Ayel wonders if it's conscious, a ploy to get his sympathy or his softness. But he knows when he watches the lines of Jim's face tighten that it's unintentional, and that Jim knows better than to try to garner Ayel's mercy. He already has a well of it at his disposal, the devious creature. Ayel sighs, presses two fingers under Jim's chin again. He tries to ignore the swell of heat somewhere low in his stomach at the implications of the intimate, if taboo, gesture. You'll overinflate my ego, putting me in a place of such high importance. The grin he gets in return warms him, and Ayel turns back to cleaning his rifle to distract himself. Jim slides his blade away into its leather sheath and drapes gracelessly over Ayel's shoulders, fingers tapping with a strange, arrhythmic restlessness on his left upper arm. I knew you'd like it, Jim yips, all brightness again. Ayel slumps under his weight, as is required. Jim is so proud of how big he's gotten, how broad his shoulders are, and how he's a whole half a foot taller than Ayel, whose stature never seemed to matter. Before his young human charge outgrew him. Ayel still trumps Jim in strength, which softens the blow, but he'll never be able to resist Jim's drapery and general enjoyment of playing on his lack of height. I like it, Ayel agrees, long-suffering. He almost sticks his fingers in gunwale again, but decides against it when Jim starts shifting minutely, because Ayel knows what's coming next, can feel it in the bunch and coil of Jim's muscles, the curl of his body. Jim, he warns, you ought to be asleep. If the captain catches you unaware at dawn guard, you'll deserve every lash of the whipping he'll give you. He won't whip me, Jim says. He leans closer to Ayel's ear, snapping his teeth playfully, trying to draw him into a play fight. Haven't you learned not to try to predict Nero? I won't be unawares, Jim chirps back. Ayel can tell he was poised for the opportunity to say that, the warm wriggle of him spelling out his glee. I'll be fine, Ayel. You worry too much. Ayel pushes at him with a low growl, some of it legitimate frustration, the rest grudging fondness at how utterly incorrigible Jim is. Jim lets Ael shake him off his shoulders, leans away, enough for Ael to wonder if he's in the clear. Then Jim bites his shoulder. Hard. James! Ael snaps. He shoves his rifle aside and twists his body, using Jim's shoulders as a lever and pushing Jim flat on his back. Jim grins and barks out wild laughter, bucking up and slinging one of his calves against Ael's side, shoving him sideways and off. They tussle, and Ael is proud that, near the end of it, he actually has to scrap to keep the other hand, rather than giving over to Jim the way he always does. Still, Jim tires more quickly than Ael. There are some devastatingly human biological factors that cannot be fixed. And when he begins to falter, missing blocks and losing the squeezes of his legs too early, Ael purposefully misinterprets the cast of Jim's weight and lets Jim slam him into the slick metal of the deck, panting and gloating, his bright blue eyes the only light things in the dark of the Narada's recesses. Gotcha, Jim says, both hands planted on Ael's chest, his hair mussed, the spikes sticking up awkwardly, and his face sweat-streaked. Ael presses the pads of two fingers against the bend of Jim's elbow and says, I could cut your arms down here. You should have secured my wrists. Jim's face twists a little, in frustration or maybe irritation, and Ael hurries to soften the blow, aware that this isn't the place for lessons. You'll never forget that now. Jim's expression morphs into a small smile. He rolls off to Ael's side, examining the pieces of Ael's rifle, and Ael sits up, watching the grace of Jim's hands and the care he takes with the weapon, because he knows it's Ael's. Ael lifts his fingers to his mouth, tastes Jim's sweat on them, the essence of him, smells of his blood, of him, as though this scent is soaked into every inch of him. Bed, Ael says, when this train of thought unsettles him. He stands and comes to Jim's side, plucks at the taut skin of his shoulders where slicked black lines of ancient Romulan prayers are etched. They twist down Jim's shoulders to melt into the glyphs that stretch in lines down his spine. Syllables knotted over each vertebrae, screaming of a world Jim never had the chance to witness, a world he fights to avenge simply because it's how he's been raised, it's what he's been bred to do. Ael took the boy himself from the human woman's arms, watched from the Narada as her shuttle was incinerated. Come on, Jim. Jim sighs and clambers to his feet. He's mere weeks from 18, the human age of adulthood, if Ael recalls correctly. Ael surveys him without meaning to, his eyes lingering on the cut of Jim's body, the way his muscles move beneath his skin. When his time comes, he will undo this universe's Spock. What? Jim says quietly. He bends a little, peering into Ael's eyes, and Ael startles with delayed reaction. What? Jim cocks his head, and Ael hears something sly creep into his tone. It's not me that has to worry about being caught unawares, is it? Don't mouth to me, Ael mutters, tapping Jim's chest warningly. You forget who's second in command. Pulling rank, Ael? Ael slits his eyes. Were it anyone but Jim, Ael would take that as a threat. But coming from Jim, mercurial as he can be, warm and playful one moment and strangely perceptive the next, he knows it's harmless. Yes, I order you to go to bed, younglet. I'm not a younglet anymore, Jim sighs, but he turns to go, towing along the edge of the deck. Ael bites down a surge of wary protectiveness, doesn't tell Jim to back away from the edge, to be more careful to remember his limits. He turns back to his rifle and pulls it into his lap, vaguely fraught with ripples of disappointment. Disappointment, because he has come to think far more fondly of Jim than he ever should have allowed, because he can see this fondness shifting its focus, sliding into something darker and headier, more consuming. It is dangerous in these times to let anyone close. Ayel, Jim calls from three decks up. Ayel tilts his head back, raising both eyebrows in wordless response. Jim's grin is visible, even with the distance between them. Then, in the traditional Romulan tongue, "Good night." Ayel bites down sharply on the inside of his cheek. He is aware that closeness is weakness, and yet he foolishly knows he would cut out his own heart to allow this boy to live. After all this time, perhaps he might even favor Jim over vengeance. Like Jim has become enough to soothe the burnt, still raw pain from the loss of Romulus. "Good night," he answers, just loudly enough to be heard, and listens to Jim's footsteps fade into the constant heartbeat of the Narada's engines. The end.